Welcome to the brainstorm. We've got Fable 5, we've got ChatGPT 5.6, Sol, Terra, Luna. We have Alex Karp on CNBC going off, like 8 different people sent me that clip, and open source models coming in to scoop up some of the economics here. Brett, maybe we go to you first with what was announced last week and how are you comparing it?
Sure. So GPT 5.6 is kind of, one, it's half the cost for the same performance of GPT 5.5. And two, it offers, I mean, at least also half the cost for the same performance as Fable, the Anthropic's reputed best-in-class model, and offers higher-end performance, at least on many benchmarks. So it's a clear catch-up and surpassing by ChatGPT. And I think that given people are focused on economics now, it'll probably continue to shift the marginal user over to OpenAI. But Frank, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think, there have been a lot of model releases. Like all the major, like 5 top US AI companies have all released models in the last month and a half, basically, from like Google's Gemini 3.5 flash launch through Meta releasing a new model that's actually better than that and a lower cost, which is really interesting. Grok 4.5, which is behind, but not that far behind where Anthropic and OpenAI are. And at a much lower cost. So you can clearly see the emphasis on efficiency that's going on right now and the comparison relative to Anthropic, which it's still unclear to me, and they keep it unclear, how much of the higher cost is them charging a premium because they can versus their model is actually less efficient. We actually don't know the underlying efficiency. They might just be taking a much higher margin, but I would suspect it's a little bit of both. The other thing is that the products are evolving rapidly as well. So Anthropic launched Claude Cowork, which has been their kind of lead out enterprise product for web and mobile, which makes it much more useful than having to sit next to your open laptop. OpenAI did the same thing by launching ChatGPT Work, which basically brings a Codex powered agent into all the ChatGPT surfaces. And XAI is also iterating on the Grok Build app, which is their coding agent. Also, not as widely discussed because we're talking about all these frontier models, but the new ChatGPT voice capability is really good. I don't know if you guys have used it, but like they basically came up with a way to let, the voice model is much better. It's full duplex, so you can, you know, it can talk and listen at the same time. It can also delegate its thinking and tool use to a frontier model, like language model behind the scenes, which means you don't get these responses that are just like totally dumb or fabricated. It sounds and acts like a frontier intelligence now that I think is just going to be like extremely useful.
Frank, why don't you talk us through this chart that you made comparing all of these performance metrics and cost?
Yeah, well, it occurred to me, I was kind of wondering, the genesis of this analysis was wondering when Gemini 3.5 Pro was going to come out. That's really the model that Google will expect to compete with Fable and GPT 5.6 Sol. And they did the same thing last year. They released Gemini 3 Flash. And then almost 30 days later, they released the Pro version. I think they were planning to do the same now. The Pro version of 3.5 has apparently been delayed. It's almost 2 months now since 3.5 Flash. I think no doubt they're trying to refine it based on the launches that have happened since then, which again are from all of their biggest competitors, and they're increasingly competitive in terms of performance and cost. Looking at the chart, you can kind of see what I walked through earlier, where OpenAI and Anthropic are clearly still in the lead in terms of frontier intelligence. As Brett said, OpenAI's latest model appears to deliver similar intelligence to Fable, but at less than half the cost. And then XAI, with the help of the Cursor, both team and dataset, training on XAI's infrastructure, has delivered a near frontier intelligence at a much lower cost as well. And Meta's back on the leaderboard and actually ahead of Google, just based on these benchmarks, which I think we can all agree are relatively one-dimensional and don't represent the real-world utility of these models in as compelling of a way as you'd want them to. But it is the best basis of comparison that we have outside of vibes.
Yeah. I would also offer that doing well on a coding benchmark is a strong indication that the team can deliver performance on general purpose knowledge work, because the agentic capability is dependent upon that coding capability. So there's a, those are good benchmarks to look at for kind of competitiveness of the agentic products. And then also that these models are not distinguishable from their economics in some way, as in, like you said, Frank, Anthropic might be not revealing how efficient they are at delivering this model, but they are making an economic choice with how big they build the model, you know, how much pre-training they put into it. And then that translates down into what they can reasonably charge for the model on the back end, but also how quickly it's able to offer answers. And so the reason I think OpenAI has moved definitively ahead here is not just the top end performance, but they have a full breadth of offerings across all different kind of the intelligence spectrums at various price points for cost per task. And so you get a real continuum of ability. Now, it's still packaged in a really kind of chaotic way. And I think their next step is then to deliver to the user, hey, you want a task done, we're going to intelligently route it based upon how quickly you need the task done and how much you're willing to pay for the task or how performance sensitive you are across all of these various models. And I think that's the direction that the market is moving. And they're clearly set up with the raw material to deliver on that direction.
Well, that seems to be one direction. But Nick, you are Mr. Anti-Frontier Lab for the purpose of this discussion here. You know, we were talking Satya, Karp. You know, Frank's chart arguably misses the most important players in the room. What are your takes on how these frontier labs compete against everything open source here?
Yeah, I don't even know if it's for the purpose of this show, but I think generally we may be asking the wrong question, which is, you know, what is good enough? And, you know, Satya and Alex Karp are talking about, I think, the nuances in that question, which is one, how do you protect your privacy as a company? What do you really need to get the job done in terms of, I think, you know, this the boogeyman here is the open weight Chinese models that I was just looking at OpenRouter. And for the first time, I think the top 10 leaderboard for weekly usage is dominated by Chinese models. So number one is Tencent. Number two is Xiaomi. Number three is DeepSeek. Number four is Minimax, which I assume is another open source. Five is Z-AI. Like, these are companies we're not even talking about. It takes you until number seven to get to Anthropic. And then eight is Nematron 3, which I believe is another open source model. And so I think, you know, these major, you know, heads of companies, Satya, Alex Karp, are talking about the dynamics at play, which is one, and I think Satya lays it out very well in his recent post. He talks about the reverse information paradox. Not only do you have to pay for intelligence through the cost of token consumption, but you also pay for that intelligence by giving up proprietary knowledge every time you use the model. Because unless the model is stating that they're not going to use this to reinforce the next model to be better, you're essentially giving away all of this data to these frontier labs. Now, what he proposes is that the hyperscalers, where the cloud operators sit, need to come in and provide protections. This is also kind of the Palantir story, where he's like, don't worry about the frontier model. We're going to swap out the back end. You'll never even know what model
you have to talk your book. You have to talk your book.
But I think, but what's interesting is they're probably selling a better story right now, because we've talked about on the show, you had Brian Armstrong come out talking about, we want to increase token usage. Don't take this as a sign that we don't want token usage to increase.
But token usage is the wrong metric. Like, as in, even the OpenRouter, so OpenRouter is the subset of people who are actually setting themselves up to be able to route back and forth between different APIs. So it is a sub-selection of a set of customers who is heavily kind of basically explicitly trying to switch between models. And so you would expect them to be more aggressive switchers than the rest of the market. And if you're measuring on token usage, yes, I think there are going to be many orders of magnitude more token burned on free models, quote unquote free, than on others. And because, you are going to, insofar as you can burn inexpensive tokens, like that cost basically the cost of electricity and generate performance, you'll always be trying to aggressively route towards that. That does not mean that it necessarily pollutes the economics of the frontier intelligence models. Think about the pay of a CEO versus a line worker on an assembly line, right? Like, so the CEO gets extraordinarily heavily compensated. The line worker is basically interchangeable with other line workers. The frontier models are positioning themselves in the CEO role. And then the open weight models are positioning themselves in the line worker models role, where there's going to be constant kind of like turnover.
You know? Social unrest is coming for the CEO.
I mean, Brett, how many, I mean, I think if you were to look at like the, like knowledge base task universe, like the number of tasks out there for knowledge workers to do, how many of those tasks actually need a frontier model at this point? And I think
that's the key question. So let's pause there and ask, because I had the same question on Frank's chart, right? Like a 54 versus a 60 on this intelligence index.
Who cares?
It's like, what percent of tasks need that delta?
How many tasks can you give to an AI agent today? No, wait. Wait, how many tasks can you give to an AI agent today and say, do this in a half an hour, and it does it perfectly the way that you would do it if you were doing a half an hour's worth of work against it? It's basically zero, at least as far as I can tell. As in, we're not delivering on the basic, like, fundamental task of, like, being an analyst or being, you know, they can assist, they can buttress, they can build up a piece of work that then you have to complete. They are not actually, they're pretty infantile right now. Even, like, the meter data, I'm so skeptical of this idea that you can offload a task to an agent and it'll do 12 hours of human work at a 70% success rate. I think that's like, I don't know how they're judging it or what 12-hour piece of work they're giving to it. But I think the problem even lies in the 70% success rate, because if you don't know that it's right, 70, like the 30% of the time will kill you. So I just think there will be a time when we are over delivering on intelligence, I suspect, but then it'll go into embodied robotics and all kinds of other fields where you actually need a lot more than we currently have in terms of software capability. But in knowledge workspace directly, we're like not even close to close. I think it's economic value capture at the top end.
Yeah, let's pause here just to explore. Yeah, go ahead, Nick.
No, I mean, I think maybe you're taking your own... Hold on, Brett.
So you're...
Mute him, Sam.
Okay. Well, I'll just contextualize. So as we were talking about this, Nick's assertion was that essentially the frontier releases are already like iPhone cameras, right? It's like amazing, but it's all incremental relative to what the average person is actually doing with them. Brett, I'm going to put words in your mouth here. You're saying it's like we haven't even had the iPhone moment yet for agentic use cases. Nick, you go first, and then Brett.
I'll say that the work that can be done by that kind of average-ish frontier model is also instantly commoditizing in a competitive landscape for knowledge work. And so imagine you are in a competitive trading environment, and you are relying purely on, call it AI slop or knowledge work output, to make your trading decisions. You're at a point right now where you would be massively outcompeted by somebody who is using AI to augment their intelligence and using the frontier AI to do so. And so, like, there's a character, when you read material by AI and then you read it over and over again, you can tell instantaneously that it's AI, and then you can see kind of like the seams in the puzzle. I think where, like, there will be a point where that's no longer the case, where there's kind of like more adjacent moves being made by it that are more interesting. Or in the data that it's generating, it's going down a few layers in the data to realize kind of like novelty and things of interest and picking them out. But I don't think we're there yet. And I don't think we're there even in like relatively minor pieces of work. And like I agree that for some workers, probably it's producing material that's of similar quality. And, you know, frankly, those workers need to skill up, you know, like as in, like there are ways in which it can plug into work processes that are useful, almost certainly. And I don't think it's like you set, there are many, many contexts in which you would think this is a relatively simple thing in which you should be able to set it loose and it would do it and do it as consistently with human output. And it definitely is not there yet. So, I mean, that's my case.
All right, Brett first, then Nick.
No, I agree. I'm actually curious to hear what Frank said. The way that I would summarize it is, I think over the last few model rollouts, the median knowledge worker has not felt a material bump in performance because they've already figured out how to use these models to complete a majority of their day-to-day tasks. I think, Brett, you're looking at it from the work that you do, which is, yes, very involved, very skilled, and even that, I'll say, very heavily influenced by AI from what I'm seeing you post on the research channel. So I think it's, does this mean that the 1% of the 1% won't have like outsized gains and be able to unlock the agentic capability that you're talking about? Absolutely. But for the average knowledge worker, I think their understanding that, you know, it's reached their level of skill and they can use this to complete the majority of their work. And now companies are realizing that and saying, if that's the case, we can swap out these frontier models because they're just jacking up the cost on tokens, or we're using like this high performance engine to do this like very skillless task almost. And we can take an open source model and put it in and no one knows any better.
Well, that means it almost sounds like you're saying, it's like knowledge, companies were willing to pay a lot because knowledge workers convinced the company that they were valuable. But the reality is they're not that valuable.
I mean, I don't want to say that because it sounds mean, but
maybe. Here's my point of
the gap here for us. GPT 5.5 came out and it was double the cost of GPT 5.4 for a few bumps on the intelligent index. How many of you guys are using 5.4 still because it's similar intelligence but half the cost?
I don't even know what I'm using.
You upgrade to the latest model without thinking, because everybody chooses smarter over lower costs. Right. The smarter model at the same cost for sure, right? We all agree on that. And OpenAI and Anthropic continue to have the smartest models that people are choosing. And I could say that objectively because you could just look at the revenue of these businesses. Like Anthropic maybe estimated 60, 70 billion in run rate revenue going to 100 billion by the end of the year. And OpenAI somewhere in the mid tens of billions. The open source AI companies are in like the hundreds of millions to low billions at the most. So where people are choosing to spend money, and this is also where product differentiation comes in, because you can run an open model yourself, you can run an open model in the cloud, or you can go take the product from these companies like DeepSeek or Minimax, et cetera. I think that so far we've seen that the market is willing to pay for the best product and model combination. And I think that will continue to be true, and that these companies will have selections of models at lower costs if you don't need the frontier intelligence, which is what like Anthropic, for example, has. You have to go pick Fable versus Opus versus Sonnet and Haiku. There's four different tiers, all at different price points. And, you know, let me put it a different way. What we're trying to find is which companies are going to generate the most revenue and result in the best investment opportunity, which companies are going to be disrupted and you should avoid putting money in them. I think if the open source models, which are, you know, you could say that they are within spitting distance of performance, but a much lower cost. I don't think the cost on the ground is actually that much lower, because you either have to run your own infrastructure or pay margin to a cloud provider. And very few companies, only the most technically advanced companies with the most skilled, so by definition, a small number of companies, will be running their own infrastructure. So most will be paying a margin to the cloud companies anyways, which is like, if it's going to be priced similar to their general cloud margins, like 50% gross margin. So you're not getting the model for free. The weights are free, but the underlying compute is not free. The infrastructure you need to run the agent harness is not free. The team to build the product and maintain the product around it is not free. So there's a reason why a majority of companies are paying for the products from OpenAI and Anthropic. And I say products intentionally because the model could be swapped out on the back end, even for like the Claude Code agent. You can point it to a different model. And I think that if you see the clouds start to grow faster than the frontier labs, that means open source is winning. That means that more people are going directly to the cloud, they're running open models, and that's where spend is accruing rather than to OpenAI and Anthropic, the private frontier labs of the world. But right now, if you compare the two, Anthropic is growing like 10x year on year at these insane numbers. Hold on, but Google Cloud is the fastest growing cloud, 63% year on year growth, and they're at an 80 billion run rate. If this trajectory holds, Anthropic could be bigger than all of Google Cloud by the end of this year. And that needs to change if open source models are winning. And that's not changing right now.
Because we were getting Anthropic ARR updates every other day, like a month ago, and it's crickets. It's crickets now.
All right, wait.
Well, they also ran out of compute to serve their customers. Inject one other like point here, which is there's this noise in the marketplace because there are the people who are talking their book, like Palantir and stuff, like you should go open source. You know, there are there's a set of actors in the space who are on Claude Pro plans, but not on Enterprise, where they have all you can eat plans, where they're like, why would you ever go away from Fable? You know, it's basically like unlimited intelligence, and they don't face the cost of the marginal token. And so then they think it's the best in the world because they're not economic sensitive at all per token. And by the way, like that's an intentional strategy from Anthropic and OpenAI to give these all you can eat plans to small enterprises so that they grow up relying on basically maximizing their utilization of AI. And if they can outcompete the incumbents, then actually that's a winning strategy for both them and for Anthropic or OpenAI, where it's like, if you're on an enterprise plan, either you're in a regulatory sensitive industry like finance, or you're more than 150 seats, then you have to pay per token used. And so then you're in this, hey, we need to figure out why our spend is so high plan, where you're trying to shift to more efficient tokens and you're facing this budget crunch. If you're a startup, you're in basically like using as many as you can, actually signing up for additional pro subscriptions if you can to maximize the token use under all you can eat. And so it creates like different kind of performance incentives for different actors and kind of like a different information sphere from those different actors. So it's somewhat complex in that basis.
Okay, I'm going to go around the horn here quickly. Two questions. First question, we'll go around, then second question. Only answer the question. We mentioned it in passing, Grok. They came out pretty impressive, not at the frontier, but potentially at the performance per cost frontier. Frank, will Grok compete at the frontier in the next year and a half?
I do not think they're going to catch up to the, as in have a number one placed model in the next year and a half.
Brett.
I think that, okay.
Brett.
I'm defining the frontier as intelligence against cost. And they're basically approaching, I think they will be at the Pareto frontier by that time. Where they put themselves on that intelligence versus cost mark will be dependent upon their underlying access to compute and competitive positioning.
Nick?
No. I'm going with Frank.
Next question. Given expectation for performance, will they gain significant user growth, Frank?
Yes. They have a much better model than they've had, and they have a smaller base. They're going to gain user growth.
Brett?
I think they'll gain tokens. Like their token growth will exceed their user growth. Like it's a little less clear how they're positioned on the Grok build, like that kind of application layer. But on the API side, I think they'll win marginal share because they have good performance per cost.
Nick. Yeah.
They seem to be strategically impaired. No.
All right. now the final wrap up. I think the highlight from last week's brainstorm was Brett's analysis and prediction calling exactly how the U.S. men's team was going to crash out of the World Cup. It's Monday, July 13th. Tomorrow, we have France versus England. Brett, break it down for us. Who's winning? Why?
I mean, France is so much better than England because I think England has a pretty kind of like sclerotic strategy. They're also exhausted, whereas France has been cruising through. So I expect France, you know, 2-1, 3-1, something like that.
All right. Any last words, Nick? Sorry. Frank?
Isn't it France versus Spain?
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh my God. You know what did me?
All right. Don't cut it, but Brett, give us your take.
I'll give a shout out. I'll give a shout out here to Kalshi. I just went to Kalshi quickly and I saw the World Cup winner, not the next game. So there you have it.
Oh, well, who's trading off? No one. I mean, England, Argentina is more interesting because I think, you know, Argentina has had some bad results, but I still think England is like totally gassed. I just think they're exhausted. And I think Argentina is much fresher. And so I think Argentina to win, despite
let's go to the next game. So it's more timely here.
Oh, Spain, France?
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? Toss up. Both teams are amazing and kind of Spain's coming into form and France looks amazing. So there's no like major weakness on either, I don't think.
Wow. A much less interesting take.
It was so obvious why they were going to lose. So that was much easier.
All right. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next week.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public are separate, unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to any company marketing or selling the products or services of the others. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public make no representation or warranties regarding and expressly disclaim any responsibility or liability for any acts, omissions, losses, or damages of the other entities or their affiliates, officers, employees, or agents. No company shall be liable for any indirect, incidental, consequential, or special damages arising out of or in connection with this podcast or its contents. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK, and investors should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statement. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.